Good evening. Welcome to this Larry Report. Today is March 20th, 2014. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Upcoming events are luncheon with Catherine and joint with Going Organic Magazine in Palm Springs is now scheduled for May 4th. That's a Sunday. You can arrange to register and get tickets at the blog or at the resource subscriber page. June 28th and 29th, I'm going to be at Secret Space Program Conference. Their website is now up. It's June 28th, 29th in San Mateo, south of San Francisco. I'm going to be joined by Richard Dolan, Joseph Farrell. It's going to be a very interesting conversation. Our theme tonight is The Optimist's Guide to Chaos. All week long, you had, I liken it to picking grapes from a vine that are full of both delicious and rotten grapes, where the rotten grapes are doing everything they can to shriek and shake and do everything possible to grab your attention. And frankly, even looking at them is draining. And learning to live creatively within the chaos means learning to just pick the delicious grapes, create a lovely meal, and not let the rotten grapes detract from the experience. The challenge, of course, is many people around us are eating the rotten grapes and getting sick. But the vine was turning up, and so I kept trying to say, I want to focus on the people who are digging for the facts as opposed to pushing their book, which in the financial world means just pushing what makes the money. I want to find the people who are finding ways of doing more for less instead of scrambling for resources and lying and spitting and killing to get more. And then, of course, you're moving to a higher mind rather than being angry and attacking and sort of sucking into the divide and conquer. And so we really need the capacity to discern and ignore. And I find it a challenge because I'm always trying to understand the news so I can report it to you, sort of report the deeper system. So sometimes I have to look at the shrieking grapes. Money and markets, the top story, of course, is the dance between the Russians, the European Union, and the U.S. over the Ukraine, grabbing resources. It looks like the grab is spreading wider. Putin signed the Russian Crimea Treaty, and now the Crimea has decided to join the Russian Federation. That has major strategic and geopolitical implications. I put up on the blog a story from Global Research about what it means in terms of control of the access to the Black Sea and the waterways, which is very important. Also, in related reading, some of the articles on the different European and American interests that have gone in to take positions in the land and farming, as well as the gas deposits. I think what you're watching is Western and Russian corporate interests whacking up the Ukraine. It's going to be quite an event to watch. The thing to watch next is what happens. The G7 is meeting at The Hague, where they're co-locating a special meeting on the situation. And the real talk is, are they going to throw Russia out of the G8? If they do, that's big. Meantime, Putin is making noises about annexing other areas, or certainly referring to Estonia in his speeches. The Estonians have a fair amount of Russian-speaking population, but they hate Russia. They were delighted to leave in 89. So that's if Putin starts scrambling for more space, you're going to have problems. We saw the French minister imply that Russia was going to be thrown out. We see David Cameron yesterday announce that at the meeting next week at The Hague, they should discuss permanent expulsion of Russia from the G8, and then it would be back to the G7 if it takes any further action to destabilize Ukraine. So it's a very fluid situation, and it remains to be seen where it goes. I think the big problem is what I talked about last week, which is you have a country with very valuable resources whose GDP per capita has not kept up with Poland and Russia and the surrounding areas. And it's kind of use it or lose it. It creates an insecure situation where interests sort of eager to scarf up global resources can go in, and you get the kind of mess you get. You get more disaster capitalism. not unrelated to what's going on at the Ukraine, we see further announcements from various forecasters about a slowdown in the U.S. and North American GDP, but also in China, which, of course, their growth rate has been a very important part of driving the global product statistics. Big drops as they reform their shadow banking system. If you look at the U.S. numbers, a significant amount is how much retail has dropped, particularly for the broad population. I continue to believe that Obamacare made a significant contribution to that, but there is no doubt that we're looking at continued falling household income. That means slowing in housing as well. A big distraction globally has been the following of Malaysia Flight 370. Watching the story unfold reminds us how important it is to learn how to live with uncertainty. It's best to avoid the rabbit hole of conjecture, or if you do want to be part of an investigation, probably the best source is Reddit. I put a link up to their discussion. What you see is a whole lot of very serious citizens who are trying to piece together the hard facts and see if they can't come up with something that it kind of reminds me of how if you look at the investigation of TWA 800, you had a lot of pilots and various engineers and citizens who contributed to really figuring out a lot about what had really happened. Anyway, you can see the link to Reddit up on the blog. Freescale Semiconductor had 20 people on the flight, and it's very, certainly very sad for their Asian operations. It was interesting. I had just reviewed them as an investment possibility because MIT Technology Review had included them in their 50 most innovative companies. And so a lot of questions about whether what happened had anything to do with the presence of 20 people from Freescale Semiconductor headed for China. The Treasury fiscal proposal for the administration's FYI 2015 revenue proposals for the U.S. Department of Treasury are released by the U.S. Department of Treasury is up on the blog. There are some real tidbits for those of you like diving in and seeing what's coming. The one I highlighted on the blog is they're proposing mandatory automatic IRAs for employers with more than 10 employees and no retirement plans. And if you look at what Obamacare is doing to small business and you add that on top of it, and then you add the minimum wage, you're talking about a couple body blows all at once. Corporate cash flows are very much on people's mind. I put up a story last week on the blog about the extraordinary number of large corporations that have paid no taxes, no federal taxes for quite some time. Part of the reason the corporate cash flows are on everyone's mind is corporations are sitting on $162 billion. I would say it's probably, if you look at offshore accounts or tax haven accounts, much, much more than that is my guess. But an extraordinary amount of cash sitting offshore, and corporations say they're not going to bring it back because there would be negative tax implications for them. But meantime, and this story is up on the blog, someone dug in and realized, oh, well, a lot of that money is invested in Treasury securities, so they may not be paying taxes, but Treasury is paying them billions and billions of dollars in interest to the offshore pools. And so the sort of the cash flow, if you look at what we're paying them, but they're not paying the Treasury, you kind of raise some eyebrows. A new CEO survey indicates that the majority of American multinationals expect increased sales and expect to spend a lot more on capital expenditures, but not hiring. They're automating. So all of this in combination is rubbing the wrong way because March 15th, the Ides of March, was when businesses file their taxes. So small businesses filing their taxes and a reminder of the sort of double standard world they're living in. And then April 15th, of course, is individual taxes. And when individuals are paying as much tax as they are and corporations are paying as little as they are, the frustration and anger is just rising, and it's going to keep rising between now and the third week of April. It's one of the reasons people get worried about covert events at this time, because the question for I think the leadership is how do we stop the anger from growing into action, which could be very dangerous and expensive to the leadership. A new proposal out from Congress. It's not a done deal, but there's a bipartisan agreement. It still has to prove that it can get through the Senate. A new proposal to liquidate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That's all part of, as I've said many times on the Solari Report, reducing capital available for home ownership. If you look at the last 50, 60 years in the United States, home ownership has been built on rising housing prices that is really driven by both currency debasement, that's sort of just, you know, the Fed monetary policies, and larger square footage. And that's been driven by federal credit and cheap financing with a long-term bull market in bonds. And as we've talked on the equity overview, it's hard to imagine that that sort of long-term bull in the bond market is going to continue. Certainly, I'll talk a bit about what happened at the Fed open market this week, but the clear indication from the Fed this week is that the turn in the bond market is upon us. So it's one of the reasons next week on the Solari Report we'll be posting my interview with Matt Stein on how to build more resilient housing, because the clear message from the financial markets is we're moving towards a world where we want to organize our housing to be smaller and much more energy and maintenance efficient. So now the Freddie and Fannie proposal from Congress is a wholesale proposal. It's basically saying you take the existing portfolio and move it into a co-insured holding. My big question is, are we teeing the insurance companies up to do place-based reengineering? Co-insurance has been pretty dreadful when it's been tried before by Federal Housing Administration. I posted a blog post as a comment this week on the Freddie and Fannie proposal. Take a look at it. And co-insurance is a vehicle where a lot of shenanigans can go on. It's a little bit scary. And if you look at that current portfolio and what's happening to household income, there's some big questions about what really is going to happen there. Take a look at the blog post, Phasing Fannie and Freddie from Homeowners to Landlords. All of this, I think, is going to a world where the people, the institutional investors who've been buying big, big positions in the single-family homes as the foreclosures happen, are planning on turning those into big REIT positions that they turn around and then syndicate to investors, whether it's with REITs or with rental bonds. As I said, the Fed Open Market Committee met this week, and we see Yellen making her first sort of presentation afterwards. The Fed did several things. It continued the taper by reducing monthly bond buying by $10 billion, which is the third consecutive cut of that size. The committee also discarded the jobless rate threshold for considering when to raise borrowing costs and said it would look at a much wider range of data. They also indicated that they're planning on raising interest rates by the middle of next year, with the U.S. economy showing signs of strengthening. Problem in the economy is that there are only certain sectors that are strengthening. There are other sectors where things are not so well. The equity overview for the next quarter that I do with Chuck Gibson, we're going to be talking about the Fed and intermarket analysis and what that rise in interest rates might mean for investors. So very much tracking Fed policy and what it means to other markets. A couple of other big stories I just wanted to put out. Clearly, cable TV is on death watch. And that's not just because the content manages to get worse and worse. But if you look at the numbers on cable fiber and satellite TV, it's down in 2013 for the first time ever. It's been growing since it's been with us. And now it's finally turned. Meantime, mobile ads doubled to $18 billion. That is, for many people in the advertising business, that seems a small number, but the growth is spectacular and it's going to continue. General Electric is spinning off their finance subsidiary. My guess, they certainly gave all sorts of reasons. I think it's really to protect the finance subsidiary from questions regarding class action lawsuits related to Fukushima. There's an article we put up on the blog in Top Picks about the class action lawsuits that are piling up. That's going to be a very interesting and long discovery process. The Chinese online juggernaut Alibaba continues to ready their U.S. IPO. I continue to predict that this is going to have quite an impact. The last I heard, they were planning a valuation of $70 billion. This is a company that just started in 1996. They've been quite successful at getting small businesses online and giving small businesses access you know, to sort of world-class marketing through the web. It's a very interesting business model. I posted the Economist story on Alibaba several months ago. It's up on the blog. But I would really encourage you to learn about it and what it's all about, because I think when Alibaba does their IPO, it's going to get a lot of attention, and it's going to sort of ring the bell in America about this shift from what I call global 2.0 to global 3.0. Because if a school teacher can start a company in 1996 that is today worth $70 billion, is one of the biggest, most powerful businesses in the world, it'll show you what kind of shift we're in. Speaking of The Economist, they had a new cover story this week called The Age of Crony Capitalism. And what they're talking about is the extraordinary global corruption that's occurred in the leadership as we have gone through this sort of hot fever period of globalization. I read it as a signal that the financial coup d'etat is over. They don't need capitalism at this point. They don't need this kind of corruption to help them engineer the financial coup d'etat and sort of the rebalancing of the global economy. And so Mr. Global is planning on pulling in the reins. I'll never forget watching the fever start in 1995 with the creation of the World Trade Organization. I remember being in meetings with business people I'd worked with for decades and thought I knew. And suddenly, you know, I thought they'd gone insane. The fever was incredible. It was as though people had lost their compass, their morals, their minds. I could tell you many stories, but you know, unfortunately, what I've seen in the United States is we go through a bubble and everybody has the fever, and then the bubble's over, and Mr. Global brings in, you know, kills the dirty team, removes the dirty team in, brings the clean team in, reaffirms the legitimacy of the system. Then you bring in the dirty team and start to harvest all again. So I see this as part of being a cycle, but I will say this, what you're seeing globally is the crony capitalism and the corruption really threaten the ability of the economy to function. A new poll showing Hillary way ahead of Governor Chris Christie in a election for the next presidential election, which proves that the dirtball tactics are working in New Jersey. You all know what my theory is. I think if the Bush group can get Hillary positioned to be the Democratic contender, that will make Jeb Bush that much more attractive. If you're looking at what you have to do to get Jeb Bush elected president, you know, you certainly have to get rid of people like Chris Christie. So, I think if we were to be able to pull down the veil, what we'd find is the Bushies behind it. Market report. The market was skittish this week as we waited for the Fed Open Market Committee report on Wednesday. Commodities had started to peak up. Precious metals had been peaking up for the year. They turned down again today. Rambus Chartology, who I follow, sold their mining position this afternoon or this morning. So commodities and precious metals are looking a little sort of like it's not the beginning of a new movement, but we'll just have to see what happens. Emerging markets were starting to peak up as well. And again, they drop back. The S&P seems to be holding its own. So does Europe. So the message continues to be develop world stock markets, despite many commentators talking about how overvalued both markets are, particularly the S&P. The Russian stock market, of course, is getting hammered. There's no sign when you look at the currencies or the equity markets that says that Russia's winning anything. So now what did happen, which is I think I want to cover in the market part, is what you did see in the squabbling between Russia and the United States is what I call the Midianite thing. You have the United States and the European Union try and impose sanctions not on the Russian nation, but on specific targeted individuals. You have reports, rumors of the Russians threatening to do the same to U.S. officials, and of the Russian secret, Russian intelligence capacity, sort of dishing out sex and innuendo and other dirt on the American officials involved. So you have a lot of mudslinging back and forth. It was reported that the Duma, the Russian parliament, essentially voted and said, we want sanctions applied to all of us. And, you know, this is, I used to have one of the political appointees in the administration when I worked there, when the political appointees would start fighting, he said, this is nuts. This is like being on a rubber lifeboat with people who are fighting with, you know, with knives. So it seems a little bit suicidal. But the interesting thing is, if you look at how bad the control files and the corruption is among many, many officials, certainly in North America and in Europe, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens if leadership groups start dishing out the dirt on each other. And hearkening back to the Economist article on the age of crony capitalism, if you're Mr. Global and you want to clean this stuff up, of course, this is how you do it. You encourage all the groups to dish out dirt on each other, and this is how you clean them all out. So one way or another, I think what I call the Midianite thing is going to continue to happen. The Midianite thing is a reference from the Gideon story in the Bible in Judges chapter 6 to 8. It's in the Old Testament. It's in the Old Testament where Gideon is asked to throw the Midianites out of Israel. And what happens is the Midianites jump up in the dark and kill each other. And so I think I call it the Midianite thing. But watch for more destructive behavior on the part of the leadership. And as I said before, part of the optimist guide to navigating chaos is to be able to ignore the mud as it flies back and forth. Our hero tonight is John Williams, who's also on the interview. John Williams is the head of Shadow Stats. There's nothing more important in a period of change than the ability to get accurate, hard facts about what's happening in the economy and what's happening financially. And it is extremely difficult to do because the official statistics have been monkeyed with more and more and more. And of course, you have trillions of dollars of powerful interests who have, you know, who hire the best and the brightest to mislead everyone with statistics. So trying to dig down and get hard statistics is difficult. John does a masterful job of really helping someone like me track the economy, and I am deeply appreciative of it. A lot of people are. He commands quite a big subscriber group, so I was thrilled that he could join us again on the Solari Report. But I recommend his website to you, Shadow Stats, and he is our hero. Ask Catherine. A couple questions tonight. So many people seem to believe that living in a democracy means that we get to elect our politicians, but doesn't living in a democracy really mean that our politicians, once they're elected, deliver the kind of government that the people really want? Technically, we don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic as our form of government, but we believe in and use a lot of democratic process. We have more than a few challenges. If you look at the federal government, we don't have information sovereignty and we don't have financial sovereignty. So it's very hard to have sovereignty, which means it's very hard to function according to democratic process because the politicians have to respond more to the bond market or the financial interests than they respond to the people voting for them. And of course, the deepest and the most important issue is this issue I always come back to, which is the ability to kill with impunity. If you're a group of people who have the ability to kill with impunity, then ultimately the politicians have to do what you want, and the population will support them because the population has always tended to support the people who have the power to kill with impunity. What's interesting is if you look at the Russians telling all the Americans to go jump in a lake, I almost wonder if we aren't seeing a coalition form of people who are willing to, you know, dig down and fight because, you know, they've decided that short-term convenience is no excuse for wanting to be a slave. And one thing Russia's made very clear all along, particularly after they got taken to the cleaners by the Americans during the 90s, is they don't want to be, they They want to be a sovereign nation. They do not want to be owned and picked over by corporations. And I think that's part of this sort of deeper squabble that's going on. Another question related to the U.S. government turning over control of the Internet address system to the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, who's sort of been encouraged to now convene stakeholders and come up with a global Internet community to craft a transition plan. I would say that this has to happen, and I think ultimately what it's going to do is it's going to make it easy for the private corporations to have a much more powerful voice and role in the Internet than governments. And it, you know, it really depends on the job that the Internet Corporation does. But essentially what it's going to do is it's just more power to the private guys. And of course the people with the resources always, have the ability to hijack the process. Let's go to the movies. The night that I shut down the Hamilton Securities Group, I went to see a movie called The Full Monty, and I've never laughed so hard in my life. And anything that could get me to laugh on a day like that, if you've ever seen the U.S. government take hundreds of millions of dollars worth of software and value that many, many people have worked very hard for years to create and just destroy it almost on a whim. It's hard to imagine that you could laugh when you're watching that, but I did. The Full Monty is a story set in South Yorkshire in the UK. When the steel mill shut down and unemployment rates soars, and you see all the former steel workers in a state of despair, and one of them turns to an entrepreneur, or he takes the entrepreneurial pathway and organizes a striptease show in the hopes of raising enough money to pay off his child support obligation. And it's one of those magical moments when sort of people come alive again. And it's hard for me to imagine that I'd be recommending to you a movie about a striptease show, but it's a gas. And it's a reminder of the kind of, I don't know, sort of entrepreneurial vigorish we need when we're dealing in situations as deeply depressing as wide-scale unemployment, which we're certainly facing here in the United States. Our interview with John Williams was masterful. We're talking about the big issue. We're coming into the 2014 elections, and I think the elections this year are going to be very serious because we now have over 100 million people in the U.S. on mean-tested subsidy. The labor participation rate is at a 35-year low. As I've said many times, recent studies indicate that 40 to 50% of existing jobs are going to be automated in the next one or two decades. And if you look, as I said, at the CEO surveys, the big corporations are making big, big bets on automation. And so if you look at the change we've been through, now that the financial coup d'etat is essentially over, that money is being reinvested, and that money is going to be reinvested in automation, and that means tremendous downsizing of the current employment or existing employment patterns. So, you know, I left the Bush administration in 1991 saying it's an emergency. We have to help the American middle class jump the curve on the situation. They have to pay down their debt. They have to re-engineer their skills. Well, instead, we didn't do it. We encouraged them to take on beaucoup more debt, buy much bigger houses than anybody could afford in the kind of world we're going into, and encouraged to, you know, not do things that really changed and evolved their skills. And so, if anything, we encouraged their kids to take on mammoth amounts of debt going to colleges and studying curriculum that was irrelevant for the world that we're going into. So, you know, we kind of encouraged everybody to go in the opposite direction of where they needed to, and now here we are. And my question for years has been, what's the plan? You know, this is a big mystery to me. So we dig into the employment statistics and talk a little bit about, you know, what the plan is. And I think I think this question is becoming apparent to millions and millions of people. And the 2014 election is a time when we have the opportunity to talk about, okay, what's really going on and what do we do about it? Because this is something that's going to touch every one of us. It's going to touch our kids, our grandkids, our families, our community, and we're all going to have to be a part of addressing what's happening. It's no point in waiting for government. We've seen where they are coming from. So take a look or take a listen to the interview with John. It's a good one. And as I said, Shadow Stats is a website. If you don't know it and you want to understand what's going on in the hard facts in the economy, it's a great one to check in on. In closing, next week, I'll be posting an interview with Matt Stein, Reinventing America's Homes and Buildings. We'll be talking about resiliency in your home. Matt, his website, his books, tremendous resources for building resiliency. Then the first week in April, I'll be doing my first quarter wrap-up. Please let me know what you want me to address, if you have anything you want me to address during that. And then April 10th, Franklin Sanders with Precious Metals. Good time to have it. There's a lot of questions. Is this market going to peak up, or are we going to go back down and start looking for another bottom? So until next week with Matt Stein, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.